A Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're exploring a civilization that feels both incredibly ancient and, well, surprisingly relevant. Babylonia. For a lot of us, I think Babylon conjures up these sort of fragmented images, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the Hanging Gardens, maybe the Tower of Babel, biblical stories.
Exactly. Myths and legends, mostly. And our guide today, Trevor Bryce, really wants us to move past that. His work argues that Babylonia wasn't just some footnote. It was a vital cultural and political hub in the ancient Near East.
A hub that actually engineered things we still use.
That's the core argument. Things like codified law, sophisticated governance, even remarkably how we measure time and angles on a circle.
Wow. Okay, that's a pretty big claim. And we're not just talking about a flash in the pan here. This civilization lasted over 1,000 years.
A really long time.
So the big question Bryce tackles is, how? How did this civilization manage to adapt, survive invasions, political chaos, cultural absorption by others, and still create these lasting, innovative systems?
Yeah, that's the puzzle. And the answer seems to lie in their adaptability, their resilience, and maybe surprisingly, their intellectual focus. Babylonia wasn't static. It had to be dynamic, constantly evolving.
So its real strength wasn't just military might.
Not primarily, no. It was more about their ability to create order, to systematize knowledge, and use that for governance. That commitment to structure, that's arguably its greatest legacy.
Okay, before we really dive in, let's talk about our guide here. Who is Trevor Bryce?
Well, he's a very distinguished scholar, professor emeritus of classics and ancient history at the University of Queensland. He's dedicated, gosh, 4 decades to studying ancient Near Eastern civilizations.
And critically, he's not just a Babylonia expert, right? His background is broader.
That's right. He's a leading authority on the Hittites as well, and ancient diplomacy in general. That broader view is really what makes his perspective unique.
How so?
Well, he doesn't look at Babylonia in isolation. He understands the whole neighborhood, the Hittites, the Assyrians, the Egyptians. So he sees Babylonia as a major player in this really complex, competitive international system. It wasn't just existing on its own.
And he's not just reading secondary sources. He gets his hands dirty with the originals.
Oh, absolutely. He works directly with the primary evidence, including, you know, those hundreds of thousands of cuneiform tablets that have survived. It's quite incredible, the amount of material.
So he's piecing it together from the ground up.
Precisely. He combines archaeology with textual analysis, and he even brings in ideas from political science and anthropology. It gives you this picture of Babylonia as a living, breathing, evolving society that makes his work both really rigorous and, thankfully for us, pretty accessible.
So the book itself,
yeah.
What's the journey it takes us on?
It's essentially a comprehensive tour. It moves chronologically, mostly, starting way back with Hammurabi's rise in the early 2nd millennium BCE.
All right.
And it takes us all the way through the ups and downs, the rivalries, the empires, right up until the Neo-Babylonian Empire falls to Persia in 539 BCE. But it's also thematic.
Meaning it's not just kings and battles.
Exactly. Bryce digs into the social and cultural fabric. He explores how ordinary Babylonians lived, how they worked, worshipped, how they managed things like banking, which was surprisingly complex, and legal contracts, agriculture in a challenging environment. It aims for a whole societal picture.
So if you had to boil down the central argument, the thesis, what would it be?
I think it's that Babylonia's real lasting power wasn't in its armies or its buildings, impressive as they were. It was intangible.
Intangible.
Yeah, their genius was in creating adaptable institutions.
Yeah.
In codifying knowledge, law, math, astronomy, and in setting up these sophisticated systems of governance that could actually survive regime change, which happened a lot.
So Bryce is really trying to elevate Babylonia's status in history.
Definitely. He argues they weren't just passive inheritors of the earlier Sumerian civilization. He calls them, I think the phrase is, its most successful interpreter and transmitter. They took what came before and actively shaped it into something enduring.
Okay, let's get into some specifics. We have to start with Hammurabi, right? Ruled around 1792 to 1750 BCE.
The cornerstone figure, absolutely. And he didn't inherit a superpower. Babylon was a relatively minor city-state when he started. He used smart diplomacy, strategic alliances, and yes, military campaigns to make it the dominant power in the region.
And his name is inseparable from the Code of Hammurabi.
Of course. But Bryce offers a really interesting take on the code. Yes, it was a landmark legal achievement, no doubt, but it was also, maybe even primarily, a masterful piece of royal propaganda.
Propaganda? How so?
Well, think about the stele itself, that massive stone monument. It was meant to be seen. It portrays Hammurabi as this divinely chosen shepherd of his people, the ultimate bringer of justice and order, sanctioned by the gods. It's a statement about his legitimacy and power.
Okay, but help me understand this. If it's this great symbol of justice, how does Bryce square that with the fact that the punishments were so clearly stratified? You know, different penalties for the upper class, the commerce, the slaves. Isn't that just institutionalized inequality?
That's a really sharp question, and it gets to the heart of it. Bryce's point isn't that the code achieved modern equality. It absolutely didn't. The innovation was the system itself.
Oh, okay.
Before Hammurabi, justice was often arbitrary, based on local custom or the whim of a ruler. The code established, for the first time on such a scale, a publicly accessible, written, systematic legal framework. Even with its biases, it introduced predictability. It introduced the idea of evidence. That foundation, that principle of codified law, is what echoed down the centuries.
That idea of continuity, of building systems that last, seems really central. And it leads us to a period often overlooked, the Kassite dynasty, roughly 1595 to 1155 BCE.
Yes, sometimes called the Forgotten Centuries, but Bryce argues they were absolutely crucial. The Kassites were originally outsiders, foreign rulers, but instead of imposing their own culture, they did something remarkable.
What was that?
They fully embraced Babylonian culture. They adopted the language, the religion, the traditions, the scribal practices, everything. They essentially became custodians of the very civilization they had conquered.
Wow, so they weren't trying to erase the local identity, they actively worked to preserve it.
Precisely, and that act of stewardship was incredibly important. It ensured Babylonian culture survived and even thrived during the late Bronze Age, which was a pretty turbulent time internationally.
Is there evidence of their sort of standing during that period?
Oh, yes. A key piece of evidence comes from the Amarna letters, that amazing cache of diplomatic correspondence found in Egypt from the 14th century BCE.
Right, I've heard of those.
In those letters, you see the Kassite king of Babylonia communicating directly with the Egyptian pharaoh, negotiating as an equal, as one of the great powers of the time. It shows they were fully integrated into the top tier of international relations, maintaining Babylon's status.
But that stability didn't last forever. What happened next? The rivalry with Assyria.
Right. Eventually, internal weaknesses and shifts in regional power dynamics made Babylonia vulnerable again. The relationship with their northern neighbor, Assyria, became the defining conflict of the next era, the Iron Age. It was often brutal.
Culminating in something pretty drastic, didn't it?
Yes. The Assyrian king Sennacherib actually sacked and utterly destroyed the city of Babylon in 689 BCE, flooded it. A shocking act, even by ancient standards. It really could have been the end of Babylon.
But it wasn't. Babylon seems to have this incredible ability to bounce back.
Like a phoenix, as you said earlier. It rose again, leading to the Neo-Babylonian Empire, its last great period of independence and power. And the figurehead for this revival is Nebuchadnezzar II.
The name everyone knows, ruled 605 to 562 BCE.
Exactly. He represents the absolute peak of Babylonian imperial power and achievement described by Bryce. He was a massive builder.
This is where the legends really take off.
This is where they come from, yes. Nebuchadnezzar is credited with transforming Babylon into this wonder of the ancient world, the immense city walls, the stunning Ishtar Gate, rebuilding the great temples and constructing that colossal ziggurat, the Edomeninki, which almost certainly inspired the Tower of Babel story.
And militarily.
Also hugely successful. He expanded the empire significantly, famously conquering the kingdom of Judah and leading to the Babylonian exile of the Jews.
So immense physical power, grand architecture.
Yeah.
But Bryce argues their intellectual output was ultimately more significant.
I think that's fair to say, yes. The physical empire eventually crumbled, but the ideas lasted. And key to that were the scribes.
The administrators, the scholars.
The knowledge workers, essentially. Their mastery of cuneiform writing on clay tablets was the engine of the state. They managed the economy, recorded laws, documented history, and preserved literature, including masterpieces like the Epic of Gilgamesh.
But their most enduring legacy, the one you mentioned that we still use every day, is math.
Absolutely. Their development of the sexagesimal system, base 60. It's kind of mind-blowing when you stop to think about it.
60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour, 360 degrees in a circle. That's Babylonian.
That's directly from them. Thousands of years ago. Their geometry and mathematical systems were incredibly sophisticated.
What drove that sophistication? Was it practical needs or something else?
This is another fascinating insight from Bryce. A lot of their most advanced science, particularly astronomy, wasn't driven by what we'd call pure scientific curiosity. It originated from religion.
Religion, how?
They believed the movements of the stars and planets were divine messages, omens from the gods that predicted events on Earth. So to interpret these omens accurately, they needed to observe the heavens incredibly carefully.
So they became meticulous astronomers in order to practice divination.
Exactly. They kept detailed, systematic records of celestial events over centuries. They developed mathematical models to predict planetary movements, eclipses, and so on. This painstaking observation, born from a religious impulse, inadvertently created the empirical foundation and mathematical tools for later Greek astronomy and, through them, for modern science.
That's quite a journey from reading omens to scientific methodology.
It really is. The motive wasn't science, but the method they developed became scientific.
Let's maybe crystallize some of the big themes or messages that Bryce really emphasizes. He seems to offer some powerful reinterpretations.
He does. One quote, well, a paraphrased idea, really captures his view on Hammurabi's code. He suggests, "The code of Hammurabi should be understood less as a practical legal statute and more as a timeless royal inscription, a monument to the king's divinely ordained role as the shepherd of his people and the bringer of justice to the land."
Okay, so that really shifts the focus. It's saying the monument itself, the public declaration of justice and order under the king, was perhaps more important than the day-to-day application of every single law. It's a political statement first.
Right. It reinforces the king's authority and legitimacy sanctioned by the gods. It's about demonstrating control and order.
And that ties into the theme of resilience, doesn't it? How did they maintain that sense of identity?
Bryce stresses their ability to synthesize. They weren't just passively receiving traditions from Sumer. They were actively interpreting and adapting them. They absorbed foreign elements, like with the Kassites, but made them Babylonian. This creative synthesis kept their core culture alive through immense political change. He essentially says, Babylonia was not merely an heir to Sumerian civilization, but its most successful interpreter and transmitter.
They made the past useful for the present.
Continuously.
And what about their ultimate impact, the long-term view?
There's another powerful idea Bryce puts forward. Babylon's ultimate conquest was not military, but cultural. Long after its walls had crumbled, its intellectual traditions were quietly assimilated by the Greeks and passed into the bloodstream of Western civilization.
Wow, that's quite profound. It suggests that true, lasting influence isn't about territory or armies, but about ideas. The knowledge they codified outlived the empire itself.
Precisely. The physical city is ruins. But the ideas, the systems like base 60 math, like systematic observation, they endured because they were useful, adaptable.
So thinking about today, are there practical applications we can draw from this ancient civilization? It seems quite distant.
Surprisingly, yes. Think about organizational management. Modern businesses, especially large, complex ones, can learn from Babylonian principles of, well, bureaucracy, but in a good way. Systematic record keeping, clear administrative structures, balancing central control with local needs. They managed a huge, diverse empire. There are lessons there.
Okay, I can see that. What about other fields?
Diplomacy, for sure. Look at how Babylonia navigated its relationships with powerful, often hostile neighbors like Assyria or Egypt. They used diplomacy, negotiation, cultural exchange. Remember the Amarna letters as tools to maintain their position, even when they weren't the strongest military power. It's a masterclass in managing complex international relations.
Balancing cooperation and conflict.
Exactly. And maybe even open planning. Babylon was one of the largest cities in the ancient world. Studying their approaches to urban design, water management, integrating diverse populations within a massive city, it offers historical perspective on challenges modern cities still face.
That's fascinating. So wrapping up, what's the single biggest thing that stands out for you from this deep dive into Bryce's work?
For me, it's the paradigm shift. Moving beyond the almost mythical image of Babylon decadent, doomed to seeing them as incredibly sophisticated innovators, legal pioneers, meticulous observers of the natural world, brilliant mathematicians. Their real genius was this capacity for continuous adaptation and systematic thought while holding on to a core identity.
Yeah, I agree. What strikes me most is the sheer endurance of their intangible contributions. The temples and palaces are dust, But we literally structure our day using Babylonian math.
Mm-hmm.
That idea that knowledge, once systematized and written down, can outlast stone and empires.
Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful lesson. Their ability to absorb and synthesize feels very relevant today, too.
It really makes you think, doesn't it? Consider how many things we take for granted in modern life, the 360-degree circle, concepts of written law and evidence, systematic record-keeping. They have direct roots stretching back thousands of years to Babylonian thinkers and scribes. It prompts a fascinating question. What other ancient wisdom, maybe less obvious, is still quietly shaping our world today?
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.